come to order, and would the clerk please call the roll?
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Beyer, Beyer, Brown, Brown, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Deckard, Deckard, Devlin, Devlin, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Gordley, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Morissette, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Przonski, Przonski, Ringo, Ringo, Trader, Trader, Shields, Shields, Star B, Star C, Star C, Berger, Walker, Walker, Westland, Westland, Witsit, Witsit, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
Where are my fellow senators, please? My fellow senators, where's... We need two more. We're going to go to a call. All right, here's one. One more. We're there. All right. A quorum being present. Senator Ferrioli, I understand you have a request to make, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this morning when we agreed to rules, I alluded to a point in time where we would need to answer some questions of my members pursuant to increasing their understanding so they would feel comfortable about suspending rules so we could proceed with this process. Mr. President, to further that end, I would request a 15-minute recess for the purposes of caucus.
All right. The Senator earlier has requested that the Senate Republicans she requested a 15-minute recess for purposes of Republican caucus. Senator Brown, do you want to make a statement?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats will remain on the floor at ease.
All right, I don't have the board up here. All right, well, all right. The Senate will stand at ease for some 15 minutes, Senator Ferrioli. So is that, there you are.
Okay.
I believe the Senate R's. You want the Senate R's, the caucus room, Senator Ferrioli? All right. Would the Senate Republicans please report to their caucus room, please? There's food off to the side here, a little room, I believe. I believe it is, if you want some food, please. I paid for it. I put the flowers on the desk. 15. Those senators on the floor, we do have food through those doors in there for all state senators that are on the floor, including the independents. So please join us. It's the food's in there, please. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask Senate Democrats to kind of gather in the back room where there's nutrition and give me an update about what's going on. Thank you.
Decker. Decker. Devlin. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. George. Gordley. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Bonus Anderson. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski.
The House is ahead of us.
Przonski. Ringo. Ringo. Schrader. Shields. Star B. Star B. Star C. Berger. Berger. Walker. Westland. Whitsitt. Winters. President Courtney.
He's here. Ready? A quorum is present. Message from the House.
Mr. President, I'd like to speak in quorum that the House has passed House Bill 3510, 3511.
Senate recess filing the order of introduction, first reading of Senate measures without objection. Will proceed to the order of the first reading of House measures.
House Bill 3510 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to school finances declaring emergency. House Bill 3511 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to sex offenses declaring emergency.
House Bill 3510 and House Bill 3511 are referred to the Joint Special Committee. Present. Without objection, the Senate will revert to the order reports from Special Committee. The clerk will read the reports.
President Courtney, your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred SCR 12, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports of ACRA commending do adopt. President Courtney, your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred Senate Bill 5644, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports of ACRA recommending do pass. President Courtney, your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred Senate Bill 1105, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports of ACRA commending do pass. President Courtney, your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred Senate Bill 1106, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports of ACRA commending do pass.
I recognize Senator Kate Brown.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the rules be suspended in order that the Senate may take action on second and third readings of SCR 12, Senate Bill 5644, Senate Bill 1105, and 1106 today.
Senator Kate Brown has moved that the rules be suspended in order that the Senate may take action on the second and third reading of SCR 12, SB 5644, SB 1105, SB 1106 today. To your motion, please, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I think it's fair to say there's disagreement on some of the substance of these issues. The Senate wishes to move forward and proceed immediately to these bills, and I would ask for a call of the Senate.
Senator Kate Brown, demand a call of the Senate, joined by Senator Richard Devlin. Senator Dale Gordon, the doorkeeper will bar the door. Senator Devlin will attend the clerk to call the roll.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Fire. Brown. Burdick, Carter, Deckard, Devlin, Ferrioli, George, Gordley, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, President Courtney.
All those subject to the call are present. This is a non-debatable motion. For what purpose do you rise, Senator Ted Ferrioli?
Thank you, Mr. President. In support of the motion. It's non-debatable, I believe, Mr. President?
That's correct. That's what I have just been instructed by the Secretary of the Senate. It is non-debatable.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. If there is no objection to the motion on the floor, it is so ordered. By objection, the Senate will resume under the second order, on the order of second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 12 by Joint Special Session Committee adjourning Special Session 73rd Legislative Assembly, signed aye. Senate Bill 56 with 44 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to State Financial Administration for Money Claim Emergency. Senate Bill 1105 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to Payday Loans. Senate Bill 1106 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to School Finance for Prescribing Effective Date.
These are passed to the calendar. Third reading of Senate measure. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5644 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to State Financial Administration for Money Claim Emergency.
All right. We now begin. Is there something on the board? I'm waiting for the... Oh, just a minute. I'm ahead of the board. All right. I recognize Senator Kurt Schroeder to carry Senate Bill 5644.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 5644 adjusts appropriations and expenditure limitations for the State School Fund, Department of Human Services, and the Emergency Board. The bill increases the Department of Education's lottery funds expenditure limitation and the State School Fund's second-year spending cap by $42.2 million. This allows the lottery funds allocated in House Bill 3510 to be distributed to all school districts in the state for the upcoming school year. The bill appropriates $54 million general fund to the Department of Human Services with related adjustments in other funds, federal funds, and position authority. It also directs $83 million in general fund to the Emergency Board as a special purpose appropriation for DHS caseloads, costs per case, and program needs. The $54 million will backfill a number of other funds and federal fund revenue shortfalls, add funding for child welfare and vocational rehabilitation services and staff, and increase funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. The $54 million does not fully fund projected Oregon Health Plan caseloads and costs or services for people with developmental disabilities. However, DHS is expected to present an updated budget rebalance plan to the Emergency Board in November, and the Emergency Board can then allocate the $83.3 million special purpose appropriation if needed at that time. DHS has begun action to improve its financial management operations. Budget report includes a budget note that lays out legislative expectations for DHS to continue progress on these efforts and directs DHS to report to the Emergency Board this interim and to the 2007 legislature. The bill also disappropriates the $1.1 million balance set aside for the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program or Oregon Health Plan Services, since funding is included in the DHS budget for this. The $130 million special purpose appropriation for state employee compensation changes is reduced by $9 million based on updated estimates of the 0507 cost to fully cover state employee salary and benefit changes. The committee recommends passage of Senate Bill 5644.
Thank you, Senator Kurt Schroeder. I recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as we have explored this whole DHS issue over time, and the numbers continue to decrease, what has become incredibly apparent is that the reason we are doing this at this point in time is clearly for political reasons, and that is very unfortunate. We are looking basically by doing this at adding to the roll-up costs going into the next session a significant amount of money. And colleagues, here is the problem. What we are doing right now today is we are writing a check that I'm not sure our economy can pay. Colleagues, we have been under the assumption that our budget concerns going into the next legislative session are going to be significant. We are making that situation even worse. I personally think that this the timing on this is bad. There may be some things that need to be readjusted, but colleagues, quite honestly, we could have waited till the next legislative session to make the adjustments in DHS and been just fine. We talk about performance measures. That's a moving target. It's really hard to get there. And I'm not sure at this point in time that what's reserved to the E-Board will actually be acted on by the E-Board. At that point in time, we may be back in session and the E-Board no longer exists. Colleagues, we are being very short-sighted in doing this at this point in time. Timing is everything when you're talking about an agency as complex and big as DHS, and it has been too much of a moving target over the last several months for us to be rushing to judgment now. if it was not for political reasons, I seriously doubt we'd be having a special session at this point in time. At one point, we were looking at June for a potential special session because we would have more certainty in our numbers. But, you know, we were told to leave politics at the door when we came into this special session. Colleagues, this special session is all about politics. It's not about substance. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Further discussion. Senator Roger Byer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I stand in opposition to Senate Bill 5644. There are many reasons to oppose this bill. I don't know where to begin. There are so many. But I think a few things that I just realized a few minutes ago when the budget report on this bill and the committee report on this bill came out, we've been told in the Department of Human Services that this is a caseload issue and a shortfall of revenue to go to people who need the money. And, you know, I sympathize with that, and I understand that we, you know, there are certain people out there we don't want to kick off services. We don't want to deny services to these people. But in the budget report, I see we are adding 85 positions to the Department of Human Services. So what I guess what this really means is the people who need the money are going to be state employees now. This bill is not about getting money to providers and to clientele. It's about hiring more employees. I think that's ridiculous. At this point in time, the Department of Human Services has over 9,000 employees already. The exact number here is 9,520 positions, over 9,000 FTEs. And you're trying to tell me that wasn't enough to get the job done? We've got to add 85 more? That is ridiculous, colleagues. This is a time when we are supposed to be talking about services to the people of Oregon, not services to public employees in Oregon that maybe, you know, need more jobs. That is just one of the many reasons I just found out about that one to vote against this bill. But this bill is also about unanticipated revenues, is what it's described as in the lottery money. Well, I want to remind you, colleagues, this is not money we have today. This is unanticipated revenues that we think we're going to get. If this bill passes both chambers and gets signed into law, we're going to be left with an ending fund balance of somewhere around $8 million to cover the rest of the biennia. The biennia isn't half over yet. If we look at that as a percentage, that's less than one half of 1% of our projected revenue. This is not revenue that's in the bank today. This is projected revenue. And we are going to have on reserve way less. I'm talking $8.5 million isn't even measurable out of a 12.393 billion dollar budget, of which the leadership of this chamber all agreed in the last special session they would spend no more and no less in the 05-07 biennium than 12.393. And now that same leadership of this chamber has made a deal to spend an additional $178 million. By my calculation, we're now spending more. Contrary to the signed statement I had tacked on my door almost the entirety of last session and still have in my office that said we will spend no more and no less than $12.393 billion. And this bill will leave us with an embarrassingly low, at least that amount included $130 million in ending fund balance that was unallocated. The passage of this bill leaves us with approximately $8 million. And this is not money that's in the bank today. This is money we hope to get in the next 14 months. Colleagues, one little hiccup in our economy, and we will be back here again unallocating. Is that what you want? I certainly don't. Please vote no.
Thank you, Senator Roger Byer. I recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I rise to join the previous speaker in opposition to this bill for a different reason. The reason that I believe we have a situation here that stresses or strains the credibility of a person that we have appointed to a very, very important position, and that is the director of the Department of Human Services. We literally have forced the director to give us a number. And the director readily admits that that number will change virtually on a daily basis. The number that he has given us is, I believe, his good faith best estimate of where we are today. I also believe that if we were to ask him candidly and privately and in a different setting, he would tell you that he probably needs about $52 million to guarantee the services to needy Oregonians in the Department of Human Services. And the other precious commodity that he needs is time. Time to let his management directions take hold. Time to change the corporate culture in his agency. Time to provide the accountability measures that he has already described and that we are using as a gatekeeper on the $82 million that will go into the Legislative Emergency Fund. Time to change the corporate culture. Time to make the changes that will add accountability and transparency to the black box, the unintelligible black box that is Department of Human Services. Colleagues, I think we should appropriate $52 million to this process, and that I think we also should suspend our disbelief and trust in the judgment and the wisdom of the individual that we have asked to take the management of Oregon's most troubled agency. Throwing money at the problem is not going to solve it. Making this appropriation that brings us down to an ending fund balance that is unconscionably low is no different than playing on a slot machine and hoping that there will be a payoff at the end of the day. This is the wrong thing to do. It's way too early in the biennium to be spending down the reserves to effectively zero. I believe there is a need that can be identified today. It's far smaller than the appropriation we've been asked to make. I voted no in committee. I'm going to vote no on the floor. Not because I'm discompassionate and not because I don't want to help the neediest of Oregonians, but because spending the money and destroying our capacity to respond is irresponsible. And I also fear that if the economy doesn't stay on the trajectory that it's on, and the one thing that we've learned about Oregon's economy is that the cycles are still as volatile as they have ever been, perhaps more so, only the amplitude and the frequency are compressed. We have more volatility over a shorter time frame, and things look wonderful today because we're on the up curve. And it's like we've all developed a marvelous case of amnesia, and we can't remember losing $100 million a month that brought us into five special sessions in everyone's recent memory in this room. Isn't it incumbent on us to be a little bit more prudent and not be so generous with money we haven't even collected? Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Ferriero. Any further discussion? Senator Schrader, you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. President. I appreciate the discussion, and certainly I think it's important to air our concerns. That is the reason we're here today. Concerns about our state and our most vulnerable population. This is about policy. This is about providing services to people who otherwise would not have those services. I point out to the people that were concerned here today that this is going for special foster care needs. This is going for children that don't have homes so they can build a little stability in their lives. This is going to 9,000 uninsured children right now, 9,000 kids without insurance in our state. We just got a report card today in the paper that said we're one of the fifth worst states in this great country in terms of taking care of our young people. I think that's a travesty, frankly. There's a psychiatric facility in Eastern Oregon, a great part of our state that's oftentimes overlooked or claimed to be overlooked by a lot of people in this body that have spoken here today. Without this money and this budget, that facility is facing closure. I think with the mental health issues, the great efforts that this body, this legislature put in with mental health parity and other great bills this last session, Oregon State Hospital, we need to support those in need across this great state. Those positions, they go to all those facilities and those programs I just talked about. So if you don't want to help kids get health insurance, you don't want to support the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Facility, you don't want to support kids having caseworkers to get the foster care, the great homes, hopefully eventually good places, either back in their family or with another family, feel free to vote against this bill. I think the Oregonians like to know how you stand on these issues. Bruce Goldberg, our new director, is doing a great job. He's actually taken on a huge problem that we've known in this body, been there for a long time. It's been papered over, half-hearted attempts to look inside the financial management of this agency. And with the House Republicans and the Senate Democrats, the House Democrats, and I had thought the Senate Republicans working together on this, we actually have a pretty tough financial management program in hand. And instead of micromanaging the new director, he is eagerly seeking our support with this budget note to help him do the job he needs to do. We need to change the culture in this body. Not just the legislature, I'm talking about the Department of Human Services. He needs our support. We're here to give it to him today. He's going to be reporting to us in June at the E-Board, September and November, and then next session about the progress they're making in financial management. This is exactly why we're in here at special session, to help him jumpstart his program and build that agency, enhance the great things they're doing, and improve the things they need work with right now. We don't wait till next session. I think it's critical that the people of the state of Oregon have some idea about where we stand on the great issues of our day. That would be the Oregon Health Plan, taking care of children, the senior disabled population. They need some predictability. In 2003, we threw a lot of them out the door. Some because of the recession, some because we couldn't make our mind up, only to send them another notice 6 months later. Oh, by the way, we're working hard. The economy's coming back. We think we can actually provide some of these services. I think that's a travesty to play with the hearts and souls and minds of these people that are barely getting by. They need the assurance here today that this body stands with them, not against them. Last but not least, wasn't spoken to a great deal is our educational situation. The small amount of money that we're putting forward is like a lifeline to these school districts in our great state that are struggling mightily against the tide where costs increase, healthcare costs, mandates. They need help. I've heard from every school district in my Senate district, I'm sure most of you have heard from all of yours, that the lifeline in this bill is critical to give them the hope, the opportunity, that this body is going to step forward next session and make some big changes. And I appreciate the comments here today that indicate there's significant roll-up costs. Can we sustain this? I appreciate the previous speakers advocating for fiscal and revenue reform. We need that. We need that here right now in this state to afford the very basic services that every Oregonian, man, woman, and child expect their state government, their educational institutions to deliver. So I look forward to that discussion. Urge everyone to have an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Craig Schroeder. Senator Kate Brown, the man of college Senate. She's joined by Senator Abel Gordley and Senator Alan Bates. Doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Beyer. Brown. Burdick. Carter. Deckard. Devlin. Ferrioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Monis Anderson. Morissette. Morris. Nelson. Brzozinski. Ringo. Schrader. Shields. Star B. Star C. Berger. Walker. Westland. Whitsitt. Winters. Winters. President Courtney.
He's here. Who's not here? But Senator Winters is back there. She's back there. All members subject to the call are present. The Question now rises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 5644. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Burdick.
Please sign.
Carter.
Aye.
Deckard.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
No.
George. Gordley.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
No.
Metzger.
Aye.
Monis Anderson.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morris. Nelson.
Aye.
Brzozinski.
Aye.
Ringo.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Shields. Star B. Star C.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker.
Aye.
Westland.
Aye.
Whitsitt. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Aye.
Bates.
Aye.
Beyer.
Aye.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Atkinson. Beyer. Ferrioli. George. Cruz. Star B. Whitsitt. 23 aye votes.
Senate Bill 5644. I have received a constitutional majority declared passed. Clerk, please read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1105 by Joint Special Session Committee on Payday Loans.
Recognize Senator Floyd Brzozinski, who will carry.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, this may seem deja vu to you. Many of you may remember and ponder why we're here today and why we have Senate Bill 1005 on the floor. As most of you remember, this last session, during the 2005 session, we actually passed a reasonable compromise, Senate Bill 545, and we sent it to the House. Unfortunately, the House leadership failed to even give us schedule a hearing on the bill, let alone allow it to be voted on. At that time, we knew at that point it needed to be pushed forward. Unfortunately, it did not happen. There is a little secret here, and that bottom line is that it would, in fact, pass on the floor because there are people on the House side, both Democrats and Republicans, who knew this needed to be done. You may ask, why did that not happen? It was because the payday loan industry said no. They did not want to have fair legislation, did not want to have reform, and as they did in 2003, they shut the bill down. After the 2005 session, the legislature went on its way. We set up our committees, and we set up various committees from both sides. On our side, we actually had the Consumer Protection Committee, and on the House side, we have the task force regarding payday loans. What we learned very quickly were people within the state wanted to make certain that we did, in fact, get payday loan legislation passed. The city of Portland took it upon themselves to try to protect their interest and for their residents, and they, in fact, did pass legislation, an ordinance that went into effect. It was challenged, and it was beat back yesterday. The court said that the payday loan industry was wrong, that the city of Portland, as well as other cities in this state, could, in fact, pass city ordinances that would give some regulations in this area. Now, what we should look at is, where is this taking us today? Unfortunately, many cities in this state wanted to see other changes that they had no authority to do. The only thing that they could do is pass certain reasonable regulations that they had control over. In the state of Oregon, because of the interest rates are set by the state, there was no way that they could actually cap that. That is one of the areas that was important for them to be on top of. Today, the House leadership is willing to work with us to actually make sure this actually passes. Senate Bill 1005 will bring Oregon within line with many of the states in this state and within the country. The adoption will, in fact, bring forward what has been forwarded to us as a citizen initiative. It is one that was actually approved for signatures and is actually getting signatures today. It will, in fact, cap interest rates at 36% APR. It will allow a one-time 10% on the loan fee. It will set a minimum loan term of 31 days. It will allow for up to two rollovers. Now, you should, in fact, have a comparison as to how this really pays into what we have currently in law versus what will be the result of the passage of Senate Bill 1005. Under current law, there are no minimum terms for payments. Under the 1005, there will be a 31-day minimum repayment plan. Under current law, and based on the data that has been collected by different individuals and state agencies, it appears that currently the current APR rate on these loans that are going through currently under current law is 521% APR. Again, under the 1005, you would have a APR of 36% plus an loan origination fee of 10%. There will be no prevailing, currently there's no prevailing rates on the amount of the cap that when they are rolling them over, and under the special legislation that we have today, there will be that 36%. The rollovers will be dropped from 3 to 2. The cost, and this is the part that I think shows the comparison of what happens under today's standards versus what would happen with the passage of 1005. Under current law, if someone goes in and borrows $300, there are three rollovers. Under the current average of 521% APR rate, that increase that costs that person $300 for the loan, plus another $240 within a two-month period to actually roll those over for the three period times when they do not have the money to pay it off in full. Under the special session legislation that we have today, that same $300 loan would have only two rollovers, and it would only incur, the individual would only incur $57 over a three-month period. The need for Senate Bill 2005 has been set forth as to the payday loan industry failing to regulate itself and taking the win and taking the notice that we have tried to do through our last session and trying to get them to bring down their interest rates that they are charging Oregonians. It has been documented through the Oregon Department of Consumer and Business Services that approximately 74% of individuals who are taking out these loans are not able to pay back their loan when it first originally comes due. Therefore, they go into the position of needing to roll it over, pay all these exorbitant fees, and actually in many cases end up owing more money than they owed when they first took out the note. What have newspapers said about the payday loan industry in Oregon? The Register Guard says they have called payday loans in Oregon legalizing loan sharking. The Statesman Journal have said, close to highway robbery as you can get. The Oregonian, it is predatory business that leads people into a vicious cycle of debt. The U.S. military has condemned payday loans. They have said that the most prevailing type of loan sharking lending affecting military personnel is what is known today as payday loans. This is from John Molino, who is the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense. The Department of Defense has actually gone on the offensive and attempted to get states to regulate payday loans within their borders. They asked the Washington State Legislature this last session to cap the payday loans at 36% and give the borrowers more time to repay the loans, among other things. That in itself is what Senate Bill 1005 will in fact provide for Oregonians that are in fact in the need of these services. The industry response has been, let's say, somewhat dismayed. And, Mr. President, at this point, I ask for unanimous consent to use exhibits. I show you, colleagues, what I did yesterday. Yesterday, I had to go pick up my mail at the post office. I went there. I had to wait in line to get the mail that they had sent to me. This first crate here represents what I picked up yesterday in my mail. All of it from the payday loan industry. All of it having individuals scared, thinking that they're not going to be able to use the service because it's going to be put out of business. I get to the Capitol today, and I get a FedEx package that has been delivered yesterday for my behalf. I have another pack here. This is the second set that I got over the last 3 days prior to yesterday's mail. Again, the same thing. We opened up some of the letters that are there to find out exactly what people were complaining about. Of course, there are three different form letters that they're signing. There's concern as to exactly why these were going forward and how they all came about. What we learned very quickly was this. When people went in to get a loan, they were basically placed in front of them with these forms. Some people said, yes, they implied that they had to sign it before they actually got the loan. When I talked to people within the industry, they said, no, it was their right. But then they also told them stuff like, we will go out of business if this legislation passes. The staff went through and actually looked at another set of the same documents to see what was being sent in. What they learned is about 45% of the mail that you see here is duplicate of what has already been sent. So in other words, we have the payday loan industries making enough profit that they can actually pay for multiple mailings of the same material to those who they wanted to reach out to. One of the staff actually called one of the individuals that had a letter that had been sent to another one of our members and asked them whether or not they sent the letter. And they said, When I was asked to, about the letter, they replied, I never sent a letter. When I reminded them as the issue and told them that we had a letter with their signatures, oh, yeah, I signed that. That individual said at that institution, I won't name the one, told me that if this bill passed, they were going out of business. When asked about specific concerns they had regarding the bill that was going to be on the floor today, they said, and I quote, the only problem I have with payday loans is that the interest rate needs to be capped. I received an email, as probably many of you did also. It also stated the same type of thing. Colleagues, this is the time for us to get beyond the confusion, the speculation, and the threats, and we need to pass this reasonable legislation that will, in fact, provide for individuals in this state to be able to get a loan without mortgaging their house, going in greater debt, and actually being able to pay it off in a reasonable period of time. And at the same time, allow the industries to actually get a fair return. You ask what that return is? Instead of a 500% APR, it will be 156% APR. Many people consider that high. We saw that as the compromise from what it was.
Senator, excuse me, Senator Bozanski, are you still?
I am finished, except I've just been told that there is an error in the drafting of the legislation as to the number, and the bill that I was referring to should be Senate Bill 1105. The bill file that we received actually had 1005. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification, Senator Bozanski. All right, we're now on a discussion. I recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. During our last regular session, Senate Bill 545, the Payday Lenders Bill, was carried to the Senate floor by my good friend from the Senator from South Eugene 10 times. 9 times it was not allowed to reach a vote, Mr. President, because we all know it would have been defeated on the Senate floor had it been allowed to come to a vote. Only upon its 10th trip to this assembly was it able to receive that magical 16th vote. Senate Bill 545 died in House committee after a motion to withdraw failed on the House floor, 33-25. Now we are about to pass this poor measure, this divisive measure, this measure that will without a doubt cripple an entire financial industry, the measure that will jeopardize the jobs of more than 1,000 employees. This current SB 1105 is even more restrictive and punitive than the Senate Bill 545 legislation that failed to be enacted during the last legislative session. Yesterday, testimony was given that this legislation would reduce the industry revenue by 60-70%. Not a 70% reduction in profit, Mr. President, but a 70% reduction in industry revenue. That testimony was neither opposed nor contradicted. No industry can survive a 70% reduction in revenue. DCBS Director Corey Stressinger testified yesterday that many of these people are desperate and have no other place to go to obtain a loan. One thing is certain. Passing this measure will serve to reinstate the unregulated loan industry, the criminal loan industry in Oregon. I will vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Would you recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would ask the carrier to yield to a question.
Would the carrier yield?
Yes, he will.
He will.
Thank you, Mr. President. The question has to do with how many transactions are there in the payday loan industry for the last date that we have records?
Mr. President, I do not have the number. I know it's like hundreds of thousands. I think, if I remember correctly, what was testified to, the exact number, I can't tell you.
Mr. President, the speaker is correct. The carrier is correct. The exact number is 750,000.
Are you speaking to the bill now, sir?
No, I am speaking to the question that was answered immediately. I'll ask another if that's okay with the carrier, Mr. President.
Would the carrier accept another question?
Absolutely.
He will.
Thank you, Mr. President. Of the 750,000 transactions that were posted in 2004, the last year we have records for, how many complaints were filed?
According to Mr. President, according to DVCS, there are a very small number of complaints that were filed. One thing you need to keep in mind is that under the current law, because there is no cap limitations as such, there is nothing that anyone can actually do to redress that except this body. And because of that, that is why you have individuals within the state of Oregon, citizens, that have actually taken to the streets, getting initiatives signed as we speak.
We're in a question and answer scenario here, if I may say so, please. I think you're in almost a closing situation there, if I may say so, Senator Brzezinski.
Yep.
Senator Perry Owen?
May I ask another question, Mr. President?
Would the carrier yield?
Yes, he will.
Proceed, Senator Perry Owen.
Thank you, Mr. President. The carrier is well qualified to discuss this question. Is this not a regulated industry?
Ask for clarification.
Would you restate your question, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in testimony, Ms. Streisinger indicated this was a regulated industry, and also the folks from the Community Financial Services Association of Oregon indicated there were more than 42 pages of regulations that apply to payday lenders.
I now understand the clarification. You're correct. It does currently have regulations. These will just add to those.
Mr. President, to the bill.
To the bill, please, Senator Perry Owen.
And I appreciate the carrier answering the questions. Mr. President, there are 42 pages of regulations, any clause of which, having been violated, would be the basis for a consumer complaint handled through DCBS. And yet only 7 of these complaints were filed on 750,000 transactions. Truly, I don't know of another business that practices in Oregon that does any service that has that low a level of complaints. The carrier ascribes it, or may ascribe it, or we heard it ascribed to in testimony, that is somehow because the consumers are ill-equipped to make these complaints or don't understand their rights or perhaps are intimidated in some way. And yet it's pointed out that these are adults. They cannot have a payday loan unless they are gainfully employed and have a business relationship with a lender. They have to have a checking account. They have to be employed. There is no dispute about full disclosure or transparency on these transactions. In fact, people readily admit they are told what the loan costs and what the terms of repayment are before they take the loan. Matter of fact, they have to write a check for the total repayment amount before the transaction is closed. There is no issue of disclosure. There is no issue of transparency. And with your permission, Mr. President, if I could read a brief clause.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. In a recent article discussing a study of payday lending undertaken by Donald Morgan, a senior economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the author stated, "We find no higher level of debt and no higher rate of delinquency, and we are not finding evidence of systematic predation as we define it." It's easy to make assumptions, and we talked about the prism of our assumptions about the industry and about the borrower during our committee hearing, in which, Mr. President, the proponents of this bill simply did not make a convincing case for predation. Mr. President, some people have overlooked the fact that access to credit in Oregon is a tremendous problem for people of limited means. Establishing a relationship with a lender can be expensive. Lenders who require security of a house or a car or some other tangible asset usually do not want to handle loans in the amount of $200 to $300. And let me remind everyone here, these are unsecured loans. They have a high risk. Some people want to call this the freedom from predatory practices, and yet they can't prove the predatory practices. Some people want to celebrate this good news for Oregon consumers. But what was clear in testimony yesterday is that depriving people of access to credit in these small amounts is good news for pawn shops. It's good news for utterly unregulated internet lenders who are operating from out of state, from out of region, from out of country. DCBS testified they have no mechanism to regulate or enforce any rules against internet lenders. And if we would try to do that regulation, we'd have to add statutes, likely run into interstate compact problems, and have to add FTEs and law enforcement personnel to DCBS, as we did when we tried to interdict internet cigarette sales, which I might add, colleagues, has not been a very successful investment on our part. It's good news for title lenders who make secured loans. It's great news for those who will collect the fees on bounced checks, because very often people that use payday loans have a choice to make. They have an emergency. The choice is to go to a lender who will give them an unsecured loan for a brief period of time, or write a rubber check. And the bank fees are just part of the problem with writing a rubber check. The other part of that problem is the damage that it does to your credit rating and your standing in the community. And nobody's willing to figure the interest on a bounced check, Mr. President, but it's pretty high. The other person that's good news for is the real loan shark. The carrier alluded to loan sharking. I don't know when the last prosecution was in the carrier's jurisdiction for loan sharking, but I guarantee you, if he wants to encourage predatory lending practices, passing this bill is the way to guarantee it. You'll see people borrowing money from honest-to-goodness loan sharks who don't need a piece of paper, who don't need to disclose the rate of interest, who don't need to worry about DCBS investigations or visits, which happen with great frequency in payday lenders. We heard Ms. Streisinger testify. But in fact, the rate of compliance has improved every single year they've done inspections in the payday lending industry, which is a regulated industry in Oregon. Mr. President, I just utterly believe that if we allow this bill to go forward, it will eliminate access to credit for those who need small, unsecured loans. I sincerely appreciate the efforts of credit unions and banks to enter into this market. The proponents ardently argue that there is a place between the rate at which payday lenders lend and the market, and I've yet to see anybody moving in to fill that need. I suggest it's because it's impossible to operate at a profit. In these businesses, like any other in Oregon, have to have a profit. Mr. President, this is scapegoating. We're angry about people who don't have good jobs. We're saddened by the fact that there are many in Oregon who lack economic power and the ability to earn, and that occasionally run into financial emergencies. To solve that problem, we should work on removing obstacles to the growth of our economy. But putting more industry sectors at risk by eliminating 70% of their gross revenue is probably not the way to accomplish that goal. I listened carefully to the testimony yesterday in committee, and I have to conclude the proponents of this bill simply did not make the case that the industry is the problem. And so this is not a solution that will serve. I'll vote now, and I urge all of you not to be carried away by the emotional appeal, not to do this to a sector because they're visible and they're easy. That's a comment that was made to me on how the Old Growth Coalition put the forest products industry out of business in Oregon. They were visible and they were easy, and that's what payday lenders are. I urge you not to succumb to the emotional appeal. Carefully study this issue. Take it up if you must during the legislative session. But don't knee-jerk in the way that we're being asked to do here. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Farioli, Senator Jeff Cruz, you yield time. Senator Richard Devlin, you yield time. Prior to that, to Senator Richard, excuse me, to Senator Floyd Brzezinski. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Excuse me. Would the carrier yield to a question?
Would the carrier yield?
He will.
He will.
Thank you. Actually, I have two questions, Mr. President. The first being, has the industry provided evidence of its claims that it will actually be driven from the state? And by this question, I mean, have they demonstrated fiscal, financial data that is existing today and pro forma into the future that actually would mirror the impacts of this legislation? Has that evidence been provided?
Mr. President, in answer to the question from the asker, no, they have not. I, in fact, asked for that information because when that claim was made, I said, basically, open the books. Let's see what the impact is actually going to be so we can, in fact, take that in consideration. What a lot of individuals in this within the chamber do not know, there is a concerted effort by myself and Representative Farr to come up with legislation for the special session. I'll go into that in my closing, but no, they've never shared with me, and as far as I know with her, any factual basis for that claim.
Your second question, would you take it? Would you?
Yes, I will.
He will yield and ask another question, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. And the second question has to do with the experience of the other 26 states that have imposed caps. Has the industry collapsed? Has it grown? Has it maintained a status quo? What impact have those regulations had on this industry in those 26 states?
Mr. President, in answer to the question, first of all, there's been nothing shown to me that it has been detrimental to the industry itself. Let me use the example of Washington State. Washington State has been regulating their industry much greater than what Oregon currently does for over 10 years. In that 10-year period, the industry has grown threefold, three times as many industry or shops that are open within that state. The only two states that I know that there's been a detrimental effect is that where they've actually taken payday loan industry and said no more. The state of Georgia and the state of North Carolina both said it was so far out of control that they shut down the industry because it was so detrimental to their citizens.
Comment, Mr. President, may I make?
Are you going to speak to the bill now?
If I may.
Please do so.
Thank you. During the last session when this bill was before us, we were all lobbied on this bill. And one of the questions that I asked of the industry was, could they provide financial information that would in fact demonstrate that this bill would mortally or severely damage their business? And, Mr. President, colleagues, I have yet to receive that information.
Thank you, Senator Morris. I will now recognize Senator Vicki Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the comments that have been made today. This is an issue that I started working on in 1999 when I came into the legislature because I saw it as a problem, and it continues to be a problem, but it's not really so much the payday loan industry. I mean, it is problematical, and in 2001 we changed some legislation and we limited rollovers for car title lenders and we increased the regulation through the Department of Consumer and Business Services. But colleagues, you know what? The big problem here is we have a country of people who don't know how to manage their financial affairs. We have a severe problem with financial literacy in this country. They are forced to go to payday lenders for whatever reason, and the good senator from John Day talked about some of those. Healthcare issues are huge. People cannot afford healthcare. They can't afford their prescription drugs or whatever it is that they need to manage their health, and they may have to resort to a payday lender or a title lender. That isn't the alternative that we should have available to them. The banking industry, the credit unions have all worked very, very hard to bring financial literacy to our country and our state. I had hearings in my Senate Education Committee last session on financial literacy. Congress is actually considering directing the Department, U.S. Department of Education, to develop curriculum for financial literacy. We have forgotten about that issue. We do not educate our children in our schools or even in college about financial literacy. So if you want to really put an end to this problem, I say you come at it from the front end and you start helping people manage their money and you look at the causes as to why people are in debt. High fuel prices. I don't know about you, but it cost me $45 to fill my gas tank yesterday. $45.01. And I have a small fuel efficient car. It was $2.79 a gallon. Now I can absorb that a little bit, but think about the family that can't. Think about the family that is barely making ends meet. And their utility costs continue to increase. Folks, we've got to take a look at what we're doing out here and how we can help our families in need. This is what I'm talking about, is bringing financial literacy back into our schools, back into our lives. The only thing I object to about this bill is that it doesn't have a financial literacy component in it. We don't require someone who gets a payday loan or a car title loan to take a financial education class. That's what I think we need. As many of you know, I'm a court reporter in bankruptcy court. I see these cases every day. I've seen them come into bankruptcy court because they've been indebted to payday lenders and car title lenders. I don't see a lot of them, but I do see them. And ever since the Bankruptcy Reform Act was implemented, it's been even more difficult for our families. We call that the Credit Card Scam Act because credit card companies made out like bandits with the reform. Folks, let's start thinking about what's causing these issues. Let's start thinking about educating our populace about how to manage their money, and then we won't have to worry about these folks. In the meantime, I think this is a great bill. It helps us get started, but I really want to go further than this. I really want to take a look at how we manage our money and what we're doing. All you have to do is look at how the federal government is spending money, as Senator John McCain said, like drunken sailors. Let's start thinking about how we manage the money. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Kurt Schrader, please. Question to Kerry, Mr. President.
Would the Kerry respond, please?
Yes,
he will.
Is there anything in the language of this bill that would preclude us from visiting the payday loan industry next session, language in the statutes we're now going to pass, and get some clarity if need be next session?
Mr. President, no, there is not. In fact, it's opened up for there can be continued discussions. I think it's wise for me to share with everyone who may not have had a chance to actually read the bill. There is a provision in here as to the effective date. The effective date mirrors what the initiative has. The effective date is July 1, 2007. So that means that we will be in session in January of 2007 and can, in fact, not only look at what is being passed today, but also look at any other changes, modifications, both that the proponents or the opponents of this legislation might want us to consider.
Senator Schrader, are you? Thank you. Senator Margaret Carter, please. You.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thanks to the leadership of both bodies for bringing this legislation forward and being able to come to some kind of conclusion on the payday loan industry. However, you know, I voted no on this bill the last time, and I voted because I had three town hall meetings that people have said my greatest problem in this district is identity theft. And so I voted no at that time. I'm voting yes today on this bill because I do feel as if there's a problem. But I'm glad to hear, Ms. President, that the carrier of the bill and others will be coming back looking at this legislation and how it affects the industry the next time around. And so I'm really glad that there's nothing that will in this bill that will preclude this opportunity to be taken advantage of when we come back in 2007. Because we do know that there are some people with some problems and that these problems can be addressed in the next session of the legislature as it relates to this bill. So I am looking forward to seeing how this bill works over a period of time and if there needs to be adjustment that this body would certainly take advantage of that opportunity and keep payday loans alive in this state, but at the same time, making sure that consumers are not gouged. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Marco. I'll now recognize Senator Rick Metzger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, This legislation really sends a signal that the days of predatory lending in this state are numbered. It is amazing to think in the last 5 or 6 years that Oregon has become one of the leading state, if not the leading state in the country, for payday lenders for the density of our population, and it makes you wonder why. Why? Why is it that we have more payday lenders than 7-Elevens and Starbucks combined? In the early turn of the last century, Oregon, like a lot of other states, instituted usury laws, and they capped these small loans below 40%. Those laws disappeared in the 1980s. And what has happened in this state, unlike Washington, unlike California, unlike other states who have made sure that the market was available but put reasonable limits so that working families didn't continue to go into debt, that they started coming to Oregon. It was pointed out that we started legislation in 2001, and we did, under the great chairmanship of Senator John Minnis. And what happened after we passed some of that legislation in the rulemaking process, well, the payday lenders worked at finding loopholes in the rulemaking process in order to be able to roll these over and over again and still come up with the same result. The result today is because the intentions of the legislature in trying to have a reasonable product for working families wasn't honored by the industry, we're with this bill today. And I think it sends that very, very important message that we need to help working families. The Department of Consumer and Business Services reports that 3/4 of those who take out these loans end up rolling them over. And half of those end up rolling them over 3 times. And the average rate is over 500%. So that a working family who's already in debt, that's why they're taking the $300 out, pays $20 in 2 weeks, and if they roll over 2 more times, what they're paying for that $300 loan is that $300 plus an additional $240. Now, I agree with the financial literacy points made by Senator Walker, and she's absolutely right. The Commerce Department reported in January that for the first time since the Great Depression of 1932, 1933, this country has a negative savings rate. That means their people's income is not enough to pay their debts, and so they're reaching into their savings and then going into debt. And one of that debt is payday lenders. And we have a spiraling downward effect. What this piece of legislation does is say, no, we're not going to let you continue to abuse working families at this level, that we're going to have a cap, that you're going to be able to make a profit, you're going to be able to make a service available, but not at the expense of working families. It was interesting this morning, I got on Google to look at solicitations for these types of businesses. And there's one, if you'll get on the very first one, you know, for $2,490, they'll put you into business here. All you need is a 5x5 space. It says you can have some of your clients, you can get up to 851% interest on it. It's a business for everyone. Well, Oregon isn't going to be a place that's going to be the boomer business for payday lenders. We're going to have reasonable restrictions, reasonable opportunities, and defend working families. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in favor of this bill as well. I was a member of the committee that brought this bill to the Senate floor during the last session, Senate Bill 545. I'm also a resident of Portland, and I was very proud when my city council adopted an ordinance to try to get a handle on these payday loan companies. But the bill before us today is better than either of those products. It provides more comprehensive protection than Portland was able to provide, and it provides stronger protection than we were able to get out in our compromise bill, Senate Bill 545. At its heart, this is a moral issue. It's always been a moral issue for me. And I think it's an issue on which many religious traditions can agree. And I don't think it's any coincidence that one of the chief petitioners of the ballot measure that this is modeled after is Dan Bryant, who is the president of Ecumenical Ministries. And when Pastor Bryant when the Reverend Dr. Bryant spoke yesterday at the committee, he quoted from the Torah, and he said, "If you lend money to people, to the poor among you, you shall not deal with them as a creditor. You shall not exact interest from them." The idea of the wealthy taking advantage of the poor at their most vulnerable, at their most desperate, is offensive. It is not the Oregon way. This is the Oregon way. To put limits on it, it will put us much more in line with our neighboring state of Washington. And I believe this is a bill that we should get behind and pass. And I'm very, very pleased that this bill has bipartisan support. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Sarah Lauren Wannis Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just very briefly, I think it's extremely important for everyone to know that cities other than Portland are passing regulations regarding payday lenders. Two cities in my district, Gresham and Troutdale, have passed regulations. They have seen the problems that are arising with some of the citizens in our cities that are really being taken advantage. That's all I wanted to say. Well, there will be a lot more cities probably that are going to be passing regulations also. So I do urge an aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lamar Sanderson. Senator Brzezinski, do you wish to close? Senator Brzezinski, do you wish to close, please?
Yes, Mr. President, I do. First of all, I want to thank the President and the Speaker of the House for allowing myself and Representative Farr to have the opportunity to try to work together and get a bill out here for the special session. Both Representative Farr and I met on occasions, and we talked on the phone as to what we thought was necessary. I will tell this body that we didn't get everything we wanted. We knew that we had to get something out that was going to be fair and reasonable to all. One of the things that we thought was important was to try to have, in the spirit of what the initiative called for the implementation date to be sooner than it really will be. But under the compromise and the decisions, it was decided we will go with what was actually written into the initiative. That is why it has an effective date of July 1, 2007. Now, I also want to pay tribute to the Speaker and the President for their work and over the weekend and making certain that all of the negotiations that went on before actually came to pass today. I'm very pleased and very honored to have the opportunity to work with my colleagues on the House side, bipartisan, to actually get this bill to the floor today. With that said, Mr. President, I do need to do a couple of things. I need to clarify the record. There was a question that one of the questioners asked from John Day. He asked about, or he made some statements as to this one being high-risk loans. I would take issue to that. It's not a high-risk loan if you have a default rate of 3% to 4%. That's what the industry is showing, is there's only a 3 to 4% default. What we know is these individuals, as has been said on the record, after taking out the original loan, it may take them two times, if not three times, through the rollovers to actually get to the point of where they can potentially pay it off. That's where they incur these extra debts. As we mentioned, if you had a $300 loan and you had it under the current system, after 3 months, not only did you pay for that $300 loan, you paid fees of $240. Under this bill, it would be reduced down to about $56. Now, the other part that needs to be clarified is that you do not have to have a job to get one of these loans. I had one woman call me from Portland, a woman 82 years of age, who said that she was very concerned because she likes using the payday loan industry because they don't, as she said, discriminate against her because of her age. She told me of her living situation. She's actually trying to finish her college degree at the young age of 82. And she said that she's living in an assisted living facility. Her boys are helping her pay to make sure of that. But every once in a while, she needs to have these loans. I asked her, why were you calling me? What is the concern that you have? And she said, I was told that this would basically close the industry. Once we talked about it, she realized that basically she would benefit because she would have less fees to incur. Now, the effective date I've covered, the high risk, and no jobs necessary. The last thing I want to cover is the 31-day rule. There's been some question, and it's been put on the record in the hearings, but I think it's necessary to be on the floor. Someone asked whether or not a payday loan with the rollovers actually are small time loans, if there were actually the 31-day minimum term for repayment was somehow going to impact that ruling. It has been my concern, as well as Representative Farr, we asked the Department of Consumer Business Services as to their interpretation. And what they told us is that if the initial term is for 60 days or less, and each renewal term is less than 60 days or less, we will consider the loan to be a payday loan, and it is not outside of the bounds of the 60-day rule. So with that said, Mr. President, this is what I hope and ask that we can do. Number one, that we can pass Senate Bill 1105 because it will, in fact, help families who are in need. For those families that need to take out a payday loan, that they will have a chance to pay it back in the first time without having these exorbitant costs and fees attached because they have to roll it over. It's time, Mr. President, for us to do what we attempted to do last session. Now we have the cooperation and the work together with the House to actually put a bill together that all of us in the legislature, both House members and senators, can be happy and be proud of to take back to their districts and say, we heard you. We know that you're going out with the citizen initiative. We didn't wait for that initiative to happen. We took action today. Mr. President, I ask for a call of the Senate.
Senator Floyd Buzeski is demanding a call of the Senate. He is joined by Senator Alan Bates and Senator Jenny Burdick. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Beyer. Brown. Burdick. Carter. Deckert. Deckert. Devlin. Ferrioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, President Courtney.
He is here.
All members subject to the call are present. The question now arises upon a third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 1105. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Burdick. Carter. Deckert.
Senator Deckert.
Devlin. Ferrioli, George, Gordley, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzozinski, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Beyer, Brown, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Beyer, Ferrioli, George, Cruz, Nelson, Star B, Star C, Whitsitt, 22 aye votes.
Senate Bill 1105, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Would the clerk please read the next bill?
Senate Bill 1106 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to school fines and prescribing effective date.
And I recognize Senator Ryan Deckert, the carrier.
Mr. President, thank you. And just for starters, I want to make sure I get the bill number correctly. Senator Devlin, who's deep in grossing conversation, this is Senate Bill 1106, the most important job of any bill carrier. Mr. President, this bill and colleagues, this is one that we know a great deal about because we voted on it last legislative session. I thought when preparing to carry this bill that one thing that we discuss a great deal in this state is how we're perceived outside our borders. A good barometer of how we're perceived is just to simply Google national news media in Oregon. And, Mr. President, I'm not pleased to report to you that the first hits and the most frequent hits when you Google that question, it is not the wonderful beaches, the Columbia River Gorge. It is not that we have the lowest business taxes in the nation. The hit that one receives, not scientific, that I received the most was the state of the Portland Public Schools. And when they report, unfortunately, they are not inviting businesses and families to come to one of the last great urban school districts where not just the majority and not just the plurality, but upwards of 80 and 90% of the residents in this last, one of the last great urban school districts send their children to. Unfortunately, when you click onto these stories, you see the severe budget crisis that the Portland Public Schools had to weather in these last 2 or 3 years. They have lost, colleagues, 25%. No district. And I'm an observer to this. I have a little bit of Portland district, but I'm mostly in Washington County, so I'm an observer to this also, as many of us. 25% of their budget is being cut in the last 2 or 3 years. They have closed 5 schools. They have laid off 245 teachers in the Portland Public Schools. They have cut $8 million out of their central office administration, and they've cut a further, are looking at a proposal, which I think, from all indications, they're going to act upon, for another round of school closures, and some of the great high schools of Oregon may no longer appear on our school roadmap. They have turned a corner, Mr. President. The Portland Public Schools is headed, I think by all accounts, in the right direction. They have made some excruciating choices in dealing with what I think anyone would agree is a budget crisis of a magnitude not even the state faced in the early 2000s. This is a school district that is headed in the right direction. It is one that enjoys, by the vote of their feet and the vote of their attendance, more public support than presumably almost any big urban school district left in America. But, Mr. President, I think the most important point is the first one, that whether we like it or not, the health of our economy and the health of our state, and I like this, is directly tied to the health of the Portland Public Schools. Because if we continue to see, and I talk to folks just out in the hall today who are having to make that very, very difficult choice, do I keep my kids in public schools or don't I? And if we don't do our job to help the Portland Public Schools and all every other school district in the state do its job, unfortunately you find yourself in what too many communities have found, which is a downward spiral of business matriculation, not just outside their borders, but outside their state boundaries and the income tax and the families that also depart along with that. I will never forget the conversation I had with an executive at Nike that was trying to recruit someone to come here. It was someone that they very much wanted. And they said, here's the chief impediment, Ryan. It is we cannot get, and the CEO of Tripwire just mentioned this the other day also, we can't get folks to come, his replacement at Tripwire, can't get someone because they're concerned about the health of the Portland Public Schools. So this is our chance, Mr. President. It is the gap bond. It would allow, and I think that's the clincher on this one, is it would allow, but not dictate, it would allow local government and school boards to do their job. And it, for those of us, and we're participants in representative democracy, so I know we believe in representative democracy, this just allows representative democracy to flourish and allows those representatives who will be on the ballot as early as May of next year to stand on the ballot and cast their votes for the health of their school district. And all we are doing, and that is why it is a majority vote, is it is a permissive vote. It permits that school board to make that call. I think it is an important decision for us because I know it's a key component of Portland restoring at least part of. They're not going to get back to where they were before the cuts that unfortunately the state had to make and the equalization lawsuit, which flattened out school funding and had a dramatic effect on Portland. I don't know that they'll get back to those days. We should help them. Next session, we should get on with it and continue the reinvestment in our education, higher education system. But today, we send what my colleague from Canby mentioned earlier. It's a lifeline. We give them 2 years. This is a 3-year measure. We give them 2 or 3 years to hold on tight. We tell those parents that are working so hard from all boundaries of Portland to keep their kids and keep their schools alive, and we throw them that lifeline and we say, we'll meet you tomorrow to begin the big job, but we want you to keep afloat these next 2 or 3 years and keep doing the work that you're doing, whether it's on the achievement gap, whether it's on increasing teachers and the student-to-teacher ratio. You're doing good work, and we recognize it, and this body recognizes it, and this is our chance to reaffirm that in a few moments. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Reindecker. Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Colleagues, I'm all for local options and local people having the ability to enhance their own situation. But at the same time, I'm kind of tired of hearing about cuts to education. This last session, we threw an additional $400 million-plus into K-12. I'm not quite sure how that's defined as a cut. The problem I have with this, and if all we were doing here was giving the Portland School Board the ability to ask the people of Portland whether they wanted to pay this additional property tax, I'd be all for it. But what we're doing is we're giving the school board the ability to levy this assessment without having to ask the people. Colleagues, this is taxation without representation, and that is absolutely wrong. If I tried to do something similar in Douglas County, they'd run me out of town. But I'll tell you, in Douglas County, when the schools come forward with a legitimate reason for asking the citizens for more money, the people will step up. So the point here is, if Portland is now, as we have heard, turned the corner because it's been an incredibly inefficiently run school system for a long time, if they have turned the corner, then they should have a comfort level in asking the people of Portland if they're willing to come up with the money. This avoids them having to do that. It's wrong. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Jeff Cruz. Recognize Senator Doug Whitson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. My comments pretty much echo the previous comments. I would ask that each of my colleagues here ask yourself one question. How would your constituents react if this legislative body voted to authorize your local school board to surcharge the property taxes of the district you represent? I suspect that in my district, I might be tarred and feathered, and I should be. When I asked the governor's representative why the people of Portland School District were not asked to vote on this matter, I was assured that polling clearly shows that those people who would have to pay the tax would soundly defeat the measure at the polls. This measure is simply taxation without representation, nothing else. Let the people of Portland tax themselves. I will vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Let's recognize Senator Roger Beyer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. I rise in opposition to this bill, and I'd like to just point out something that I think everyone needs to know. This bill, if the Portland Public School Board enacts this provision, it will raise approximately $15.8 million for the school of Portland, or the Portland Public Schools. That will cost the state not quite $1 million in additional write-off of property taxes, and that's not that big a deal. But what's really amazing to me is if the Portland Public School Board had faith in what they were doing and thought what they were doing was supported by the people, this bill and this authorization will actually reduce the amount that they could go get in a local option. With or without this bill, they could currently go out and get a local option tax in the city for Portland Public Schools. The maximum amount allowed, but it would have passed by vote of the people, would be somewhere between $25 and $30 million without this bill passing. If this bill passes, it will reduce the amount of that money that could be gone for a local option package for Portland Public Schools. So by doing this, you are demonstrating, first of all, that you don't believe the people of Portland Public Schools support this, and secondly, you're reducing the amount that they could go and get by a vote of the people. I think you'll need to think about that before you vote.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. I recognize Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm hearing a lot of concern about the taxpayers in Portland from people who don't live there. I live in Portland. I represent Portland. I am proud to represent the school districts in Portland. What the previous speakers have not said in their comments is the Portland metropolitan area exports nearly $400 million a year to the districts of some of the people who are doing the speaking against this measure today. If we were not exporting that money to these other districts, we would have plenty of money. We would be in awash with money to run our school district. If for the sake of equalization, we distribute money throughout the state. We are responsible for the economic and financial survival and thriving of many, many rural school districts. Folks, it is now time to step up to the plate for the goose that continues to lay the golden egg. I urge an aye vote on this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Would I recognize Senator Margaret Carter, please?
Ms. President, thank you very much. And colleagues, for those of you who are here and familiar with the last session, know that we thought we had negotiated on this issue. However, there were some people who failed to recognize the negotiated activity that had taken place. And I'm trying to be very calculating in terms of what I say here today, because the gap reauthorization is only available to Portland Public Schools because of the gap created between ballot measure 5 and ballot measure 50. Authorization in the past and the fact that the constitutional maximum rate has not been reached yet is the only reason we're back with you here today. Let's go back to the 80s when there was not the kind of equity, if you will, and the kind of support from other parts of the state for their schools. And if you will recall, we held Portland Public Schools in a frozen position until other schools catch up in this state. It was because of the good voters like a Margaret Carter and a Jenny Burdick and an Abel Gordley and others from Portland who said, we want to do that because we want to see all of Oregon's children have a good education. We were not trying to be, as a matter of fact, the center of commerce that would not share with the rest of Oregon's children. That's why Portland Public Schools is where it is. And let's talk about efficiency in administration. I know none of you guys want me to go there. You don't even want me to go there. Because the fact remains that Portland Public Schools has more than 60 different languages taught in this school and have to have the kind of support systems in place that we do as to why our district is as big as it is. It also is incumbent upon all of us here to make sure that we don't divide this state. And that's what you guys are going there with me today. What you're saying is that there's that big Portland, but there's downstate. But we want you to share your money with us to make sure that we have equitable schooling. Why do you guys want to make me go here today? Because I believe in one Oregon. And the only way we can have one Oregon is that we share with each other. And we need to get off the backs of talking about inefficiency in Portland School District. You don't have that inefficiency because you don't have a system that big. It's important to know that if we're going to be one Oregon that we're going to share alike. Because there are good things that are going on in downstate Oregon that I love and I want to be supportive of. But I don't want you to put me way out here and make me come back and vote no on all the crap that legislation. You guys, you know you're getting me upset here. Taxpayers have been represented as a part of this process because it was the school board of Portland that said in ballot measure 5 and ballot measure 50, give us the authority to go back so that we can reach our cap. And that's what 5 and 50 did. Now you want to take it away from us, and we're just asking you permission to do it. So, great big father, if you don't want to give us permission, then give us the opportunity to go to the people. And yes, we could go. But why do we want to go before we reach our cap?
You would say that's inefficiency, and I would say it's stupid. The gap reauthorization will give both the school board and superintendent another tool in the toolbox to continue addressing the difficulties that we're having. We have a new superintendent. The superintendent is bold. She's aggressively dealing with some of the issues that some of you have said that we have over the years. She's not afraid to cut. As you've heard, she's cut over more than 240-something jobs in terms of teachers. She's been bold enough to even want to close some schools. And when she looks in my face and closed some schools in my district, I know she hates to see me coming. Because I have to stand up for my district. But the fact remains that this legislature, since ballot measure 5, did make you a statewide school board, have the responsibility to take care of all the schools in the city, and stop going around talking about the big bad portal when you need it as much as we need you on other issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Ryan Decker, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. President.
Please do so.
I see, Mr. President, Wilson High School. I see Grant. I see Jefferson. I see Cleveland. I'm looking for graduates that are sitting in this room. I see Roseburg High School. Gresham?
Not turn this into a free-for-all. Could you please proceed?
Well, my research, as you can tell, went to about four schools, Mr. President. I see us all seated in here from Roseburg High School to Wilson to Grant, and we have hung together, and we made the decision this state. We are hanging together. That was the decision that was made about 10, 15 years ago, is that rather than being a parochial system and the funding that goes with it, we're a state system of education. And all of us are representative, or many of us are representative of, as graduates of that system that today has made the decision to hang together. And I think if you look back at the decisions that this body has made in the last 10 years, it has been a collective effort on all fronts, and the formula is center-based for this, because that's how we distribute dollars, and we do it better. Better is a subjective word. We do it more equally than any state in the nation, and it's not even a close call. Not even a close call. So, Mr. President, I think today, and they say success has many, many fathers and mothers, and I think this one, this success we're about to affirm with our votes, does. And none more, I'm actually not one of them at all. The Senate President and the Speaker of the House came together with the leaders, the majority leaders of both bodies, with leaders from Multnomah County, and brokered something that is going to be a huge, huge statement and victory to the thousands of parents and their children that live in Portland. And so that will be the at least banner breath of fresh air that comes from the governor's signature on this bill, is that we did it. And we hung together like we want to hang together and like we should hang together. Of course, you've heard the debate. This is not a new tax. Obviously, it's permissive. It's something between 95 and what, 2097 and 2005 was already occurring. So don't know if we can call this historic action, but the dollars that are going to flow will be historic to every third grader, fourth grader, 11th grader in this great school district. And Mr. President, I really do believe firmly that the health of our economy is so directly linked to this school district that makes this action all the more important and imperative, because we're all in this boat. I like it. Some may not. We're all in this boat, and retaining one of the last great urban school districts, I think, is every Oregonian's challenge and responsibility. Thank you for letting me carry this bill. I appreciate the debate. It's one I think we're going to have more of in the future as we start the process of reinvesting in ourselves, our schools, and our universities. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Ryan Decker.
Mr. President.
Senator Kay Brown is demanding a call of the Senate. She is joined by Senator Richard Devlin and Senator Abel Gordley. The doorkeepers will bar the doors and Sergeant of Arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson? Bates? Fryer? Brown? Burdick? Carter? Deckard? Devlin? Ferrioli? George? Gordley? Johnson? Johnson? Cruz? Metzger? Montes Anderson? Morissette? Morris? Nelson? Nelson? Prozonsky? Prozonsky? Ringo? Schrader? Shields? Star B? Star C? Berger? Berger? Walker? Westland? Whitsitt? Winters? President Cording?
He is here. We're missing Senator Brzezinski and Senator Nelson. Senator Brzezinski and Senator Nelson, please. Senator Brzezinski has joined the floor. Senator Nelson, please. Members subject to the call are present. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 1106. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called, and those opposed no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Carter.
Carter. Senator Carter.
Deckard. Devlin. Ferrioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Morissette. Montes Anderson? Morris? Nelson? Brzezinski? Ringo? Schrader? Shields? Star B? Star C? Berger? Walker? Westland? Whitsitt? Winters? Atkinson? Bates? Beyer? Brown? Burdick? President Courtney?
Yes.
Voting no. Atkinson, Beyer, Ferrioli, George, Cruz, Star B, Star C, Whitsitt. 23 aye votes.
Senate Bill 1106, having received a constant majority, is declared passed. Without objection, the Senate will revert to the order of reports. Excuse me. I recognize Senator Abel Gordley, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would like to ask that courtesies be extended to a dynamic change agent superintendent in Portland Public Schools, Vicki Phillips, to our equally dynamic change agent school board co-chairs, Bobby Reagan, David Wind, and school board member Trudy Sargent, former school board member Julia Brim Edwards. We appreciate their hard work and their laser-like focus on closing the achievement gap. Progress is being made and will continue to be made under this dynamic leadership. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. Yes, I'd like to welcome the superintendent and the members of the school board, the important school board, to the Senate chambers today. They've been watching the deliberations. I'd like to extend the official courtesies of the Senate to you. And hope that you're enjoying your day here in your state capitol, watching your state senate and your state government at work. Thank you, Senator Gordley. Well, now, without objection, the Senate will revert to the order of reports and special committees. The clerk will read the reports.
President, according to your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred House Bill 3510, having the same under consideration, respectfully reports the backer committee do pass. President, according to your committee on special session committee, to whom was referred House Bill 3511, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports the backer committee do pass.
Without objection, the Senate will resume under the order of second reading of House measures. Recognize Senator Brown, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the rules be suspended in order that the Senate may take action on second and third reading of House Bill 3510 and 3511 immediately.
Senator Brown has moved that the rules be suspended in order that the Senate may take action on second and third reading of House Bill 3510 and House Bill 3511 immediately. To your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. While there may not be agreement on the substance of these proposals, I think there's agreement that the process move forward. These two bills include Jessica's Law and lottery to K through 12 schools, and we'd like to get to the business of the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. President. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Brown. If there's no objection, it is so ordered. Second reading of House measures.
House Bill 3510 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to school fines, declare emergency. House Bill 3511 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to expenses, declare emergency.
Pass the calendar. We're now on the third reading of House measures. The clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 3510 by Joint Special Session Committee relating to school fines, declare emergency.
And recognize Senator Vicky Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm pleased to carry this bill today. House Bill 3510 will distribute $42.3 million in excess lottery money through the statewide funding formula, providing proportional assistance to all Oregon school districts, something we just talked about in the last bill, proportional assistance. The legislature is seizing a golden opportunity to help all of our state schools as they are striving to reduce class sizes, restore programs, and maintain full school years for our children, because, as you know, we've been having a very difficult time funding our schools in this state. School districts throughout the state will benefit from this bill, from big cities to small rural communities. It appears by looking at the statewide school runs that are attached to your documentation that it looks like that's about an average of $64 of ADM, per ADMW. The money is targeted directly to classrooms, colleagues, where it can make the most difference. The modified funding formula in the bill only includes school districts, not education service districts. So this money goes right into your local classroom. This bill also sends an important message about our priorities that we will continue to fight for next session. Priorities, Mr. President, that your bipartisan Senate Commission on Educational Excellence will continue to develop and bring forward next session. No child in Oregon should be denied the opportunity for success as a result of overcrowded classes, shortened school years, or inadequate curriculums. And this bill represents an important first step in stemming the tide and putting educational excellence back at the top of the legislature's agenda. Mr. President, colleagues, I urge an aye vote today to make sure that Oregon students get the kind of education that we expect to be giving them. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Vicky Walker. I'll now recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill, please.
Mr. President, this bill is basically putting a Band-Aid on a very big problem, and it will not stem the flow of blood. We have structural problems in our K-12 system that will make funding over the long term undoable. I'm just looking at the roll-up cost of this piece of legislation in and of itself. We're going to really be behind the eight ball next session. I think for me, what is really frustrating is since I've been in the legislature, 1997, we've been talking about rainy day fund. And our need for a rainy day fund and our need to have money set aside for the downturns that we know happen periodically. I think that we have missed a golden opportunity by not reserving these dollars to that rainy day fund. And somewhat disappointed that the question was never even asked, because it should have been. We talk about it, yet when we come up with a pot of money, We immediately go out and spend it, whether it's, for whatever reason, we spend it. We never reserve money. It shows a total lack of discipline by the legislature. And I find that incredibly unfortunate. Mr. President, in conversations I have had with superintendents of my schools, I have suggested to them, because I know this is going to happen, that they take that money and they put it in the bank. Because if they spend it now, their problems in the next biennium will be even worse. So my suggestion to my schools is to do what we should have done with the money, and that's reserve it. It's unfortunate that we haven't, and I wish we were going a different route.
Thank you, Senator Jeff Cruz. Recognize Senator Charles Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, to the bill. Members, I rise in support of House Bill 3510. This additional funds will be warmly received and quickly spent. Members, understand that our public school funding will continue to be inadequate as long as we fail to deal with at least three fundamental problems. I think foremost of those problems is the 20% plus of our monies that are required to fund the PERS for school teachers, administrators, school personnel. The second problem, and maybe even more importantly, is the failure to teach reading correctly, early and fast, so that every child learns to read by the end of the third grade. The cost and failure at that point rolls up through the entire system, all the way through college, and results in a product failure rate exceeding 30%. No company stays in business with a product failure rate exceeding 30%. We must solve that problem. And third, we must insist that 65% of the school funds are spent in the classroom instead of the present 59%. Members, I support these extra dollars, but it's a pittance that could be saved if we did what is right for the children of the state of Oregon. I urge passage of this, but let's fix the real issues. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Bustar. I recognize Senator Ted Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I voted for this bill in committee. I intend to vote for it on the floor, but I just feel compelled to echo my good colleague who just spoke to the bill in this regard. We're really spending $97 million. That is the aggregated cost of the $42 million that we're spending rolled up into the next biennium. We just also spent $23 million. Mr. President, if you'll recall, in the legislative session, we put a proviso in one of our appropriations bills that if the economy got better, we would spend another $23 million on K-12 education. Well, the economy got better. And that general fund trigger, which I am told technically has not yet triggered, but is expected to do so after the June revenue forecasts, which will release $26 million more, we haven't even mentioned in this room. So, Mr. President, what we're doing is we're spending $42 million with this appropriation. In June, we'll trigger another $23 million for a total of $65. And, Mr. President, the $42 that we're spending rolls up to $97 million. The $23 million that will trigger in June rolls up to $53 million. And, Mr. President, you know, a million here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking about having expended about $1 billion that we may or may not have in the next biennium. It seems like we're spending our way into a crisis. The appropriate thing to do would be to put these dollars into the rainy day fund earmarked for education. Now, I am voting for this bill because all of the school districts will benefit. We won't prevent a single school closure with this appropriation. Not one. We probably won't prevent a teacher being fired because $62 is the average dollar amount that will go to each student statewide. And that is not probably enough to pay a teacher's salary for a year per school. But, Mr. President, I'll vote for this bill because all of the school districts in Oregon will benefit equally. I just wish there was a way for us to inject some fiscal discipline in this process and do what we promised to do, which was create rainy day funds and reserves so that when Oregon's economy, as it is inevitably to do, cycles again, we won't find ourselves returning to this building time and time again for special session. Mr. President, thank you very much for the opportunity to address this bill. Colleagues will vote their conscience on this bill, I'm sure. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Ferriero. I recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday in committee, testimony was given that we have cut expenditures, appropriations to the public schools by over $1 billion since 1999. LFO tells us a different story. Legislative Fiscal tells us that we have actually added to our state and local appropriations by $1.18 billion during that period of time. In fact, according to our Legislative Fiscal Office budget, 2005-2007 budget overview, this legislature has increased K-12 state and local spending by an average of about $250 per head count student per year for each of the last 8 school years. This is an annual increase of about $6,250 for each class of 25 students. Incredibly, over the past 8 years, that is a cumulative increase of about $50,000 per class of 25 students. During the past 3 biennia, the average teacher's compensation in the Cook County School District has increased about $10,000. The increase is about evenly divided between salary, which is about $3,500, insurance premiums, which is about $3,150, and PERS, which is about $3,150, and there was an additional $200 in payroll taxes. Our 73rd legislature increased the K-12 state and local budget for the current biennium $569 million in state and local funds, an increase of more than $500 per student per year, an increase of about $12,500 per class of 25 for each year of the biennium. We have appropriated an additional $23 million for the next school year when they reach that required revenue forecast, and now we are debating yet an additional $42 million in lottery funds for the next school year, a combined additional increase of about $120 per student, an additional increase of about $3,000 again for class of 25 students. These combined appropriations amount to an increase of $625 per student for the next school year. That's well more than $15,000 in increased spending for each class of 25 students. Yet we have continued to lay off teachers, cut school days, reduce curriculum, delay maintenance, and fail to replace textbooks, equipment, and supplies. Gail and I spoke with several individual teachers in their classrooms at a district elementary school about a month ago. They, too, were amazed at the amount of the increased appropriations and how little of that money was reaching the classroom, even after acknowledging their own compensation increase. Shouldn't we at least ask where the money went, how it was spent, what did it buy, what did the kids actually receive, what were the real education outcomes? The taxpaying citizens of Oregon deserve no less. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Whitsitt, recognize Senator Richard Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Mr. President, I would just like to put on the record a couple of figures because I think a lot of figures are being presented here today that really don't have a solid basis in terms of what the actual impact is or what the actual dollars are. One of the things that we get in trouble with when we talk about K through 12 funding is we somehow forget how many students there are in the state of Oregon. There are approximately 530,000 students, approximately 650,000 ADNW. If I describe a relatively simple program where I will tell you it will only cost $100 per student per year, or per ADMW, I'll say it that way, I've just described to you how to spend $140 million. One of the things that we did in this last session was try to get as close as possible to what we referred to as an essential budget level. This was the level at which we had a clear belief that most school districts would be able to have a full school year. Most school districts would not have class sizes increasing, but we would not be adding back. With all of our efforts during the session, including the potential of the $23 million in June, we are approximately $5 million over that essential budget level. That's in a total expenditure, state, local, and federal, of $9 billion. This $43 million is actually the first money that we have put back in to buy back any of the things that we have lost in the last three bienniums. There are people on both sides of the aisle, in this chamber and another chamber, that have talked about various spending limits for state government and for K through 12. Just put some numbers behind some of those statements. If you say that K through 12 should increase no more than 5% per year, 10% per biennium, if you're talking broadly, local, state, and federal, right now you're talking about $900 million in a biennium. If you're talking just state, you're talking about a figure that is somewhat less than that. But these numbers often seem very large until you get them down to the individual student. And how many students does an individual teacher have to teach? How new are the class materials that they have? How many resources does the school have to address the special needs of students? These are huge dollars in aggregate, but when it gets down to serving that individual student, they are needed, and more dollars that are needed than what we can put forward today.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Senator Walker, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. President, thank you. I always appreciate the comments of my colleagues in this chamber. That's what I like about coming here and hearing the views of everyone around the state. But what I'm just sort of fascinated today, I have to tell you, I'm fascinated today that there's so much support for a rainy day fund. I have to tell you, I haven't heard that much support for a rainy day fund in all my years in the legislature. Not when in 1999 we sent a ballot measure out to put the kicker in the Constitution. Not since we established the Education Stability Fund. Not since we have found the corporate kicker sends about 80% of our money out of state. So it's really nice to hear so much support for a rainy day fund. And colleagues, I would like to remind you that we do have a bit of a rainy day fund for education. It's called the Education Stability Fund. You know what happened to that? In the special sessions that we had, we just sucked money out of that like there was no tomorrow. Well, the money has started piling back up, and I am informed that probably by next biennium or shortly thereafter, it should be filled back up. But you're right. This is only a Band-Aid on this major problem that we have with funding our schools, and we still need a rainy day fund to deal with other areas of government and funding our schools. What is interesting is that while this is only a Band-Aid, please remember that in 1999, colleagues, we established the Quality Education Commission in statute. And you may disagree with what the Quality Education Commission says in their report every 2 years, but colleagues, you agreed to establish that method of determining how to fund our schools through the quality education model. In 2002, the QEM showed we were $1.46 billion short. In 2004, it had climbed to 2.1. And in the 2005-2007 biennium, the final budget left us $1.86 billion short to fund quality education in Oregon. Yeah, this is a Band-Aid. This is really a Band-Aid on a larger problem. And I am grateful to the Senate President for putting together this commission that I serve on, the Commission on Educational Excellence, because we are determined to bring a proposal forward for you in the 2007 session so we can stop arguing about this and we can stop putting a Band-Aid on the alley. This is a big owie, colleagues. And, you know, what we're doing today is really helping our kids until we can get the final resolution resolved. And I hope that you're there with me in 07 on that rainy day fund and the other things that we need to properly fund education in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. So Kate Brown has demanded a call of the Senate. She is joined by Senator Vicky Walker and Senator Alan Bates. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will turn. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Beyer. Brown. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Deckert. Devlin. Farioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger, Montes Anderson, Morissette, Morris, Nelson, Nelson, Prozonsky, Ringo, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, President Courtney?
He's here. All members subject to call are present. Question now lies upon a third reading in the final passage of House Bill 3510. Those who are the opinion the bill should pass, may answer ayes, may to call. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Deckert. Devlin. Farioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Morris. Morissette, Nelson, Prozonsky, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Beyer, Brown, Burdick, Carter, President Courtney?
Yes.
Voting no, Beyer, George, Cruz, Whitsitt, 26 aye votes.
House Bill 3510, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Would the clerk please read the final bill?
House Bill 3511, by Joint Special Session Committee, release sex offenses, declaring emergency.
I recognize Senator Kate Brown, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to begin my remarks by thanking the Senate President for his leadership on this issue. As most of you know, our Senate President has a long history of championing public safety measures and working in a bipartisan fashion to protect our citizens. And I applaud him for building on that legacy by leading the effort to pass Jessica's law today. The result, several months ago, when it became clear that the special session was a possibility, President Courtney immediately raised the importance of passing Jessica's law, and we agreed that we needed to get to work immediately so we would have time to do it right. The result of that hard work is a bill that not only includes all of the protections from the bill that the House sent to us at the very end of the 2005 session, but also includes an important provision that was missing from the House version. In addition, we worked with Steve Dole to address some of the technical issues in the ballot measure. I'd like to briefly address some of the key points of the bill before us today. First, it raises the mandatory minimum from 8.3 years for 25 years for the worst sex crimes against children. And when I say children, I'm talking about very young children. The bill is targeted at crimes against children under the age of 12. The second key aspect of the bill is that it requires lifetime monitoring of all individuals who are found guilty of committing these heinous crimes against children. Third, the bill establishes a mandatory minimum of 25 years for first-degree kidnapping in furtherance of a sex crime against a child. This last provision is an example of why it was important to have the time to carefully consider this issue and not rush through a bill that came to us in the hectic final days of the 2005 session.
In researching the issue over the past few months, we discovered that there was a discrepancy between the House bill from last session and the proposed Jessica's Law ballot measure, in that only the latter included the kidnapping provision. This bill corrects that. Fourth and finally, this bill does not apply, colleagues, it does not apply to perpetrators under the age of 18. In closing, I'd like to make a moment to recall the namesake of this bill, Jessica Lunsford. Jessica was a 9-year-old girl from Florida who was abducted from her bedroom, raped, and killed by a convicted sex offender. Her story touched the nation and laid the groundwork for the strengthening of sexual predator laws across the country. Today, Oregon becomes the latest state to honor Jessica's memory by providing protections for future generations of children. Colleagues, my friends, I urge an aye vote, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Capron. I recognize Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, want to thank the Senate President, the Majority Leader, for bringing this bill to us in the special session. I think it's an important piece of legislative business and policy that we need to get done, and I'm very glad that we're having this bill and this debate and this discussion here on the Senate floor this afternoon. I also want to recognize and thank the Speaker and the leadership of the House for agreeing to move this forward. As you know, we are in the process of gathering signatures on an initiative. And if you look on your desk, there's a number of organizations, law enforcement organizations, that are supporting this action today. Virtually all the law enforcement organizations are supporting what we're doing here today. There's one organization that's not represented by a letter on your desk that is also supporting, the Oregon Peace Officers Association. This is an important issue. It's an emotional issue for me. It's one that I've been passionate about, and you know, as you look at protecting Oregon children, you look at your own children, or perhaps your grandchildren. You think about what kinds of crimes have occurred in this nation to 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds. You look at Jessica Lunsford, who was mentioned, Carly Brusha, Dylan and Shasta Groney in northern Idaho. We have our own examples here in Oregon, Amanda Gaddis and Ashley Pond. Think about the kinds of terror and the fear that these little girls experienced at the hand of a sexual predator. And think about what we can do as policymakers to protect Oregon children from that kind of terror and that kind of horror. The only way that we can protect Oregon children, because these sexual predators, who are far too many in our society, can't be cured, they can't be treated. They offend and reoffend. The statistics and data shows that before you an offender gets his first arrest, there's between 30 and 119 victims. But what we can do is we can protect Oregon children. We can protect Oregon children by putting these predators behind bars where they cannot hurt another child. That's what this is about today, Mr. President, colleagues. And I'm extremely pleased that we are in a process today, I believe, of passing this particular bill. These are heinous crimes. They deserve a stiff penalty. We've had testimony recently, yesterday, about how this is damaging to families by having this strong, stiff penalty. I will tell you that, in my opinion, that if there is a father or an uncle or a grandfather that's offending a child in that family, that is not a family. And I'll quote my friend, the representative from Aloha, Representative Barker, who says, that's not a family, that's a torture chamber. And how dare a family member abuse that trust that is granted to him by abusing and torturing that child. I remember last spring when Jessica Lunsford was murdered. I remember having dinner one of the times that I stayed down late here in Salem during the session. I had dinner with a number of members and a couple of lobbyists, and I sat across the table from the representative from Lake Oswego, Representative Devlin. And I just remember saying, what can we do? What can we do to protect Oregon children from these kinds of heinous crimes? Almost in tears. In fact, I think I was in tears. What can we do? Well, this is what we can do. We can put these people in prison, in jail, where they cannot harm Oregon children. That's what we can do. And that's what we should do. And that's what we're going to do today. And I'm pleased that we're going to do it today. I'm pleased that this bill has an emergency clause on it. Because the day that the governor signs this bill, from that day forward, Oregon children will be protected. We don't have to wait for an initiative. We don't have to wait for Oregon voters to vote. We don't have to wait till December. We can do it today. We can protect Oregon children today. You know, my wife and I, we follow our kids everywhere. We don't let them ride their bikes down the street and around the corner without mom and dad with them. We don't let them walk to the park alone. We don't let them wander the mall without holding one of our hands. We don't let them go to the public restroom in a mall or a restaurant without one of us there. Most conscientious parents are just like that. They care about their kids, and they know that there is danger virtually around any corner. And even because we are so conscientious, and so many parents are, but we still drop them off at school. We still trust their teachers. We have to. We can't be with them all the time. We trust their coaches. Too many times, as we've seen in the headlines of late, that trust has been violated by teachers, by coaches, by people that are in the pastors and priests and those kinds of things. People that we ought to be able to trust, we can't. What we have to do is we have to put those people behind bars. Unfortunately, that's what we have to do to protect our kids, because we can't trust people like we should. So that's what this is about today, my friends. As hard as parents try to protect their children, we still have to trust. You can't be with them all the time. So I'm grateful, immensely grateful, that this issue is on the Senate floor today. I believe that this is going to pass. I believe that the governor will sign this bill. I believe that Oregon parents will be, or Oregon children will be protected. I want to finish my remarks by saying a couple of things. First of all, in the last 8 or so months, this has been a crusade for me. This has been something that I spent a lot of time on. A lot of time. In my passion for this issue. And in that passion, there's people on this floor that I've offended. And I want to apologize for that. That was not my intention. My intention is to do what we're doing today. So I'm grateful that we can do that. And I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Bruce Starr. I recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
To the bill. Mr. President and Senator Brown, I want to thank both of you for allowing this bill to come to the floor. I think this is a terrific bill. And to echo the statesman words of my colleague, there has been a lot associated with this bill, certainly not out of the direction of my heart or out of his or out of all the volunteers that have to do with this initiative, but this is a very emotional issue, and I do look forward to not only putting this behind us but coming back to what's best on this floor. I think there is a tremendous amount of thanks that goes to a few people who are in the south balcony. Two people I know, at least I can see, who have volunteered their time and their heart and their soul with purple pieces of paper in 36 counties in Oregon collecting signatures to put this on the ballot. Anytime we've had a movement in Oregon politics, it's important to know that that movement has changed, whether or not that movement is usurped, or whether or not that movement applies pressure, or whether or not that movement is successful or even not successful. But it is to the volunteers of the Jessica's Law Bill initiative and to all their hard work that this body owes a great amount of gratitude to. 8 years ago, I got started in this line of service. I was a guy who was too tall or too idealistic or too a whole bunch of other things, and I won an election. And I served in the Oregon House right next to a guy who quickly became a close friend of mine. We sat next to each other. We officed next to each other. And as we both have spent our time here, there has been a few elements of bills that have completely grabbed the heart of a few of us and just said there is a time in which partisanness doesn't count. There is something that is right and something that is wrong. This is actually one of those bills. I think the speaker that you just saw has made the leap that 29 of us hope to move to, which is a leap from someone serving in the Oregon Senate to that person of a statesman. I think the sincerity and the passion of Senator Starr on this issue is something that the other 29 of us should emulate. This bill, for all of its merits, is the right thing to do. Not for elections. Not for television or talk radio or any of it. It's the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do. So I would urge an aye vote. I would urge all of us who have little kids, grandkids, to hold them a little tighter. And I will tell you right now, some of you know I'm involved in a little bit of a project around Oregon. And I travel a little bit. And you know the issue that is on everyone's mind? Not a speaking engagement I have not had in the last year, from Wallowa County to Malheur County to Curry County to Klamath County, Deschutes, Wheeler, Baker, Union, Harney. I could go through the whole list. Every audience I'm in, someone says, how come you people can't get Jessica's Law through? And that's not a condemnation on a party. That's a condemnation of frustration. An aye vote on this bill does one thing that I talk a lot about. It builds credibility back with people. So I hope you all take credit for it, because if we really care about it, we don't care who gets the credit. This is the right thing to do, and I would urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Jason Atkinson. I recognize Senator Ted Ferriero, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would like to remind the body of an occurrence that happened in Oregon several weeks ago. A young family from eastern Oregon decided to visit Points West. They decided to spend the weekend in Portland and enjoy the zoo and take the Max ride and sort of soak up a little culture. And an episode occurred that I think really thoroughly shocked all Oregonians. Their child was grabbed out of a stroller and abducted in broad daylight in front of literally hundreds of witnesses by a person of very bad intentionality, of very bad intent. And I just want to recognize two things. One is that the hearts of Eastern Oregonians were moved by the instantaneous response of Portlanders to apprehend that person and protect that child. On that day, there wasn't two Oregons, there was one. I think this is that kind of a day. We always understand that a successful public policy is one that many people wish to be connected to. And I thoroughly applaud all of those people that have been connected to bringing this bill, this day, to this floor. I absolutely agree with the previous speaker, who recognizes the hard and heartfelt efforts of the senator from Hillsborough, who sponsored the legislation that came to the House and Senate in the last legislative session, who's been a co-sponsor of the petition. He has worked long and hard and honestly on this issue and is deserving of our praise and thanks, as are all of those people that took up the petitions and knocked on the doors and stuffed the envelopes and opened their checkbooks to bring Jessica's law to the top of Oregonians' minds, because that's what brings it here today. I tell you, we would not be at this juncture without the work of the President and the Speaker. We would not be at this juncture without the support of the House Majority Leader and the Senate Majority Leader, and we would not be at this juncture without the support of the House Minority Leader and the Senate Minority Leader. I believe we're about to make a vote that unites all of Oregon, that does something for our children, that says that we need to protect these little ones under 12 years old from the worst of the worst offenders. Mr. President, this is the kind of an opportunity that doesn't come along very often. I am certain that at the end of the day, part of our accomplishment will be acting as a body and finding within ourselves the ability to enact public policy across the aisles, across the chambers, and across the state. I thank those that have made this vote possible, Mr. President, and Madam Majority Leader, and Mr. Chief Petitioner, and volunteers and supporters, because this is a great day for protecting Oregon's kids. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Perioli. I recognize Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Permission to for visual, please.
Please feel free to do so.
And I won't lift them all up, but I've been asked of what's on the center of my desk. And following our last session, as you know, I always do an end of session report and to the bill, and I'm supporting the bill. But in my end of session report, I asked my constituents what they thought of Jessica's law and whether we should have stiffer penalties, 25 years with monitoring. And I received over 475 responses. In a very short period of time. And it was interesting, one of the comments that was in one of the response said, it's no brainer. Protecting children in our society, it's no brainer. I want to thank the passion of the senator from Hillsborough and the leadership for bringing the bill to the floor today. You know, clearly, if we're not about protecting our children, and I'm always reminded, that those of you know who work on human services, of seeing the fallout of what happens to children who have been sexually assaulted and abused. And today I was reminded even more because I received a photo from an individual who took a picture and brought it of my granddaughter and her playmate, and I thought how devastated I would be as a grandmother, as a parent, If I had a 10-year-old, my 10-year-old granddaughter couldn't be safe. So, colleagues, I think this is truly an opportunity for all of us to set aside, you know, our partisanships and to come together on an issue today that we can all vote yes for and that we can all do it on behalf of the children of the state of Oregon. And we can leave this place, I believe, a lot better than what we found it when we closed the last session. And I too, want to just say it deserves an aye vote from all of us.
Thank you, Senator Winters. Recognize Senator Vicki Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is always a hard issue for me to talk about. And I'm about to talk about some things that you may say to yourself while I'm speaking. Too much information, Senator. Too much information. Stop. Don't give it to me. But I'm going to give you that information because I think it's important. And many of you are familiar with my history, but I need to say it again because it's really important as we understand this bill. I'm supporting this bill today, but I want you, my colleagues, to understand this is not a panacea. This does not solve the sexual predator problem. I want you to understand that more than anything else today. More than anything else that you walk out of here from this discussion, is this does not solve the problem. Your Senate Judiciary Committee, as well as the House Judiciary Committee this interim, have been working very hard on looking at sexual predators, sexual offenders, and treatment. And we're going to come back here in 07 with a very comprehensive approach to trying to solve this problem. So today, when you cast your vote on this bill, please, colleagues, don't think this is the last vote you will take on this issue, because it is important that you understand it is a multifaceted approach to solving this problem. I was raped at age 5 by a 17-year-old neighbor boy. I was sexually abused later on by another neighbor. I told my mother about those things. I was sexually abused by my stepfather. I told my mother about those things. What I didn't tell my mother is that shortly after I was raped when I was 5 years old, my father started abusing me, and he did that for the next decade, colleagues, until I was 15 years old and I was able to say, "Don't touch me again." My father and two of his brothers thought of me as their sexual plaything. Did I tell my mother? No. Why didn't I tell my mother? It's the same reason that these folks who testified from the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence talked about, and why they're opposed to the bill, and I want to talk about that. It's because I didn't want to lose my family. I didn't like what was happening to me. I didn't think it was fair what was happening to me. But I didn't want to lose the family that I had. I loved my parents. That happened so much. You know, my father beat my mother. He was an alcoholic as well as a sexual predator. He beat the heck out of her all the time. I watched her fall down the stairs. I was a bedwetter until the age of 10 because I was so afraid of my father and afraid of what was happening in my family. But I overcame that, and I did it on my own, because I'm telling you, back then when I was a kid, I'm going to be 50 next month, there was nothing out there for me. There's a lot out there now today. But you have to remember, these kids need to be encouraged to talk about what's going on. And more often than not, these sexual predators are right in your own family. It is not unusual that it is your own family. I can tell you, as a child, I didn't ask myself, "Oh, if I talk about my father, he'll go to prison for 25 years.
or he'll go to prison for 10 years or 6 years or whatever it was. I just knew he was going to prison. And I was not going to tell anyone. And when my cousin told about her father, who was one of my abusers as well, you know what happened to my cousin? She went from foster home to foster home to foster home, juvenile home, juvenile home. She became a hooker. She became addicted to drugs, and she took her own life, colleagues, a couple of years ago because she never, ever got over this. So what I'm asking you today is to remember, it is a multifaceted approach. Treatment, prevention, education, it is all more important, as important as slapping a bracelet on someone and tracking their movements. We had testimony this year on February 7, 2006 on sex offender risk assessment. And when I was preparing for today, I grabbed a notebook off my shelf that said Sex Abuse Judiciary Committee, and I didn't look at the date. But colleagues, it was 3/9/04. This was 2/7/06. We had the same man come out here and testify, a wonderful man, Kurt Bumby. He's a senior researcher at the Center for Sex Offender Management. He came out again because we're serious. We're serious this time. And he talked about this multifaceted approach. So please, you can walk out of here today knowing you've done something right, because you have. But don't think you've solved the problem. Help prevent other kids from growing up in families where their family members abuse them in ways that are inappropriate. Children should grow up as children. They shouldn't have to live like that through abuse, sex abuse, child abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. Help us help our kids. So please put that hat on for next session and know that Senator Burdick and Representative Krieger and all of us who serve on the Judiciary Committee are going to come to you, and we're going to ask for your help. So thank you. Thank you for listening, and I'm sorry if this offended some of your sensibilities, but you just need to know how we feel out there. And I know I've gotten in the crosshairs with these organizations today who are victim advocates, because they don't like these sentences for the same reason that I didn't tell about my father. But you have to take a stand, and I'm telling you, maybe next session you're going to have to take a look at these familial relationships, because the state of Washington has different ways that they go about treating these people and accusing these people and sentencing these people when they're family members. So thank you for listening, and thank you for your vote today, and thank all of you for your work on this bill and for the Senate leadership on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I recognize Senator Nick Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thanks to my colleague from Eugene. I've been torn on how to vote on this bill for some of the reasons that were just given. It is not a panacea. There are things about this bill that I wish we had a fuller knowledge and hearings of during the course of a regular session. I would have much preferred to take up this very complicated issue in a regular session. The two judiciaries, as we did with the methamphetamine issue, have convened the same people together to deal with this issue and to come up with a package that really does respond to the complexity of this horrible issue. Before we started, my good colleague here from Beaverton and I, who are both the parents of daughters, agreed that the 25-year sentence, if it were our daughters, would be somewhat moot because the person would not exist to serve that sentence. This is how strongly people feel about this issue, and I certainly feel that way as a parent, and especially as a parent with a daughter with a bill called Jessica's Law and the terrible circumstances that involved. And we would love to be able to, as legislators, take a strong stand and say we're going to take this drastic action and we are going to solve this problem. But just in the course of the discussion today, we have seen a number of different scenarios of how these crimes occur. The in-family scenario, the stranger, predator, snatch them off their bicycle, rape and kill them scenario, the severely mentally ill scenario, which was the case with my good colleague from John Day, the people from Eastern Oregon, that was a severely mentally ill person. One size does not fit all, and we wish it would, because we wish we could just take one action that we could see, that would be transparent, that we know would solve the problem. There's a lot of research going on in this area. There are different strategies for different types of offenders and different strategies to encourage victims to come forward. When you're talking about an inner family situation, you are talking about severe barriers that exist within the family to discourage a child from reporting a crime. When you add an even more severe sentence, there are implications. And I'm sure there are studies out there. We are going to be studying this as a work group. So I want to echo what my good colleague from Eugene just told you from her heart. Please stay tuned. This is not the end of the story. This is something that we are doing today to start taking a strong stand against this terrible problem that we have in our society. It is our strong stand to protect our most precious things we have, and that is our children. This is not the end of the story, and I urge you all to please keep an open mind for actual facts that we will be gathering and discussing to help us deal with this, to protect public safety, protect our children, provide appropriate punishment, and do it in a way that actually works. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. Senator Kate Brown, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a Senate to pass a bill. Let's vote. I ask for a call of the Senate, please, Mr. President.
Senator Kate Brown. Mr. Manning, a call to the Senate. She is joined by Senator Bustar and by Senator Frank Shields. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant of arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson? Bates? Bates? Beyer? Brown? Burdick? Carter? Carter? Deckard? Devlin? Ferrioli? George? Gordley, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Bonas Anderson, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters. President Courtney.
He is here. Who? Senator Carter? Where is Senator Carter, please? Senator Carter, please. All members subject to the call are present. Question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of House Bill 3511. Those who are of the opinion the bill shall pass and answer aye as names called. Those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Devlin. Ferrioli. George. Gordley. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Lonis Anderson. Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Ringo, Schrader, Shields, Star B, Star C, Berger, Walker, Westland, Whitsitt, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Beyer, Brown, Burdick, Carter,
Senator Carter.
Deckard. President Courtney?
Yes.
30 aye votes.
House Bill 3511, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the Senate. We're now under announcements. Senator Rick Metzger.
Permission to return to courtesies, Mr.
President. We'll take up courtesies at this time, too, please.
Colleagues, I notice in the side aisle, who doesn't know that I'm talking about him, is Rick Attig of the Oregonian. And I would like to ask that the courtesies be extended to Mr. Attig, and congratulations on winning the Pulitzer Prize with his partner, Doug Bates, from the Oregonian, for the great series, Mr. President. I know you were very close to the Oregon State Hospital. As you know, that's a tremendous honor. There was another Oregonian that won a Pulitzer Prize last year. That's very rare to have this back-to-back. And ask the courtesies be extended and special recognition to Mr. Attig for his great work.
Yes, sir. Senator Metzger, it is a high honor in the world of journalism to have received the award that Mr. Rick Attig received. He is also joined tonight by Doug Bates, who is not here, but I do think that I do want to recognize Rick Attig, and I do want to recognize Doug Bates, and I extend the official courtesies of the Oregon State Senate on this day, the 20th of April, special session. So congratulations to both of you. I now recognize Senator Dave Nelson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I request a return to remonstrance.
Please do. I mean, you can do it, I think, under announcements in view of what you told me.
Thank you. I placed on everybody's desk today this announcement of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region 16th Annual Summit. It's July 16th to 20th in Edmonton, Alberta. If you look on the back of that card, there is a tour I think that's going to be very significant. It's a tour of the Alberta oil sands. You might know that the price of oil at one point hit $74 a barrel. It's back off that. But I think this energy issue is going to be a very big issue for us in the next session. And this group is very concerned about what's going on in Northwest, and I would encourage anybody that's interested in this to come talk with me, and I'll try and make some arrangements for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Joanne Berger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could we return to remonstrances?
Yes, please do.
All right, thank you. Mr. President, on my desk are two lanterns.
Senator Berger is explaining the two lanterns on her desk. I would ask that you listen to her.
We have two gas lanterns. They were brought because I believe that I wanted them to symbolize the public discourse in this process. I also had them in case I needed them, if the lights were out. But I want to tell you, Mr. President, that not even in the threat of darkness should this body ever, ever not have a full discourse and debate on every issue. And I want to say that I want to thank the members of the Senate who I believe came to this special session in all seriousness. And I believe that we would have been here through lights out had it been needed to take that. I want to thank the leadership all the leadership, minority and majority, who brought in the public hearings. I watched them. I thought they were very open to as much discussion as needed to take place. And while the lanterns sit here, if they were needed, they do symbolize what I believe should always be a democratic process. And I believe that those in this body have certainly shown that they agree with that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments. First of all, I want to thank the Wooden Shoe, which is in Senator Roger Byers' district, I believe. There are tulips on your desk, and they were good enough to work with my wife and to bring these tulips to you today. The Wooden Shoe, as I say, it is in Roger Byers' district. Also, I want to thank my staff, Connie and Jack and Debbie and Tanya. Of course, Margie helped with the food and so many other things on the side. I appreciate that. Senator Bruce Starr and Senator Ted Ferrioli, the part of my personality is I sometimes have been accused by my sons of being thin-skinned, and I take things too hard. And if I today, Senator Ferrioli, because I spoke sternly with Senator Ferrioli regarding the last piece of legislation, and I'm sure I was giving body language to Senator Bruce Starr, if in any way I offended you, you know, I don't know what to put on my tombstone, if I even have one, but I really don't want to be ever remembered as a mean person or as a cruel person. I'd rather be, even if it means they call me, accuse me of being soft or too easy,
as a father, as a husband, as a coach, an employee, as a senator, that's just not what I want to be about. So if anything today, Senator Lou Starr, Senator Ted Ferriello, I was too stern, I apologize to both of you. You know, my fellow senators, this is just an old veteran going to speak to you here. This is Oregon's 36th ministerial session. This is my 16th. Names like Myers and Cairns and Katz and Campbell and Clarno and Lundquist and Simmons, Hurd and Bowe and Kitzhopper, Bradbury and Smith, Adams and Durfler have all been presiding officers when I participated in those 16 special sessions. Governors Vicatia, Goldschmidt, and Roberts, and Kitzhopper, governors. I remember a special session 82 that went on for 32 days. I thought we'd never get out of there. I remember a special session in 92 that we signed died, and I begged Senator Representative Campbell, don't do it, don't do it. But he did it. And I understand why. We just signed died and went home. And don't I remember 2004 and those five. When I became the Senate President in 03 and 05, I was very nervous and concerned and afraid of many things, but the thing that made me most afraid and scared was a special session. Because in my way of thinking, a special session is the most dangerous and difficult of legislative sessions. And the reason is the vast majority of the members have nothing to do. There are no committees. And legislators didn't come here to follow me. They came here to represent the constituents, take care of Oregon. And here they come, and there's no committee structures, and just a tiny few of us come up with policies, or we fail, and you're supposed to go along. The public hearing process at best is, well, it's not very extensive. And it's a lot to ask the people. You've interrupted their private lives, their professional lives. It's an emergency. You're told to do great things in a small amount of time. And yet today was amazing. You came here, each and every one of you came here, all 30 are here. At 9 o'clock, 9:01, we had a quorum. Every time I looked out on the floor, there was a quorum today. When we recessed, you punctually came back. Every call today, amazing, you responded to a person. I know that some of you felt we shouldn't have a special session. And some of you felt that what we voted on today wasn't good public policy. And yet, the way you just tussled it and talked to each other and treat each other was total civility. This is just my opinion, but I think today this Senate, this legislature, this process worked the way it's supposed to work in a special session. And I am profoundly grateful to each and every one of you, and I thank you for coming here today. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I recognize to be confirmed the House has passed Senate Bill 5644, Senate Bill 1105, and 1106.
If there is no objection, the Senate will revert to the order of the third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the resolution in its entirety.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 12. Be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon that the special session of the Senate and House of Representatives of the 73rd Legislative Assembly is adjourned sine die.
Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, the work that this body came to the legislature to do as of 9 o'clock this morning, Mr. President, has been completed. So this concurrent resolution reads that be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon that the special session of the Senate and House of Representatives of the 73rd Legislative Assembly is adjourned sine die.
All right, but there is a light on. It's the good Senator Ted Ferrioli's light is on.
Mr. President, I just wanted to rise and first of all to appreciate the comments that you made to this body. I think they are totally appropriate, heartfelt, and much appreciated. Secondly, colleagues, like any session, special or not, there are things about the work that we do for each of us to love, and things about the work that we did for each of us to deplore.
And so I'll leave my colleagues each to their own devices to decide which of the things that we did that we love and which of the things that we did that we deplore. For myself, I think we did a great piece of public policy with Jessica's Law. On the other side of that ledger, for me personally, one thing I think we can say is that we spent $178,475,000, and that was exactly all the money there was. Colleagues, when you leave this building, I want you to remember, we spent every penny there was to spend. And so, truly, our work here is done. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Question now arises upon the adoption of SCR 12. Those of you of opinion that the resolution shall be adopted will answer ayes or names are called. Those opposed, the clerk will please call the roll.
Ferrioli? George? Gordley? Johnson? Cruz? Metzger? Montes Anderson? Morissette? Morse? Nelson? Prozonsky? Ringo? Schrader? Shields? Star B? Star C? Berger? Berger? Walker? Westland? Whitsitt? Winters? Winters? Atkinson? Bates? Beyer? Brown? Burdick? Carter? Deckert? Devlin? President Courtney?
Yes.
Voting no, Cruz. 29 aye votes.
SCR 12, having received a country majority, is declared adopted. Well, we're doing this as we do in the general session. We're waiting. We're at ease until the House adopts its signed aye resolution, and then we will open the doors, and then we will gavel out together. now declare in special session of the 73rd Legislative Assembly, sine die, adjourned.